Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money. And hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Out.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, now, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
How'd it go?
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Look, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right. Relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know?
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights, close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you, to let you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
Alright. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're gonna put you on a corner, you could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
but you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
Man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today.
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope. Afraid of change? You can't do anything about it. Change is inevitable. Growth is the great fundamental principle, the function of our lives. The seed in the ground will rot if it does not sprout and grow. And so will our minds and souls and bodies. Without conscious action and striving, our Creator answers most prayers in the terms of ideas for action. He doesn't give us something for nothing. He expects us to use what He gives us in active exercise of a freedom which He permits our minds and souls to exercise in reactions to the life patterns of ups and downs, strange events, curious, unforeseen happenings. Human consistencies, all can be changed according to the way our mind evolves, adapts, and grows. Nothing in this world is so inevitable, nor hardly so obvious. The fact is, everything does change. So often we'd like things to remain the same. It'd be so comfortable, nice. We get used to things. We adapt ourselves to a certain pattern, and then suddenly, without any warning, it changes. What are you going to do about it? Well, the first step in gaining a happier and more satisfying state of mind is recognition of the significance of this fact. Everything changes. Everything in life is changing as you and I are changing. And we must do more than this to take proper advantage of the ceaseless change inevitable in our lives. We must consciously react to direct actions that change in the paths of improvement, in the growth of our mind and soul. Change alone is inevitable and constant. But change alone is not growth. It is not progress. We have to do the progress ourselves. We have to convert. We have to adapt. Growth is a cornerstone, the primary marvel of our earthly lives. Our Creator has provided for physical growth in a pattern in which He has given us only limited powers to alter. From babyhood, we go to childhood. From childhood to adolescence. From adolescence to adulthood. And so the story grows. Physical growth. But the way we adapt ourselves to prepare ourselves for those unusual situations, the ones which we can call pleasant or unpleasant, that depends on the way we grow in our minds, the way we grow in the power of adaptation. For friends, life is a constant adaptation. Every phase of life presents a spectacle of change. And as a consequence, the spectacle of retrogression, a standstill status or progress of growth. In each case of progress or growth, there is a constant overcoming, a vanquishment of the obstacles met in the Creator's pattern of constant change. See, that's all important. All about us, we see growth or deterioration taking place in grass, in flowers, in vegetables, in pets, in our children, in our own body. But the thing that's important is the way we adapt ourselves to this change. That's all important. In our affairs, all too often, we select for cultivation the very things we don't want. Courses that lead to mistakes and trouble, sorrow and pain. Then we carefully endow these selections with the full energy of our thoughts and words. We water them with tears and self-pity. Give them the concentration of undivided attention. And then we have a way of wondering why, indeed of all our efforts, we grow in a crop of trouble and discord. Let me tell you, it is not necessary. Let us deliberately refuse to turn our thoughts to those weeds we do not want. We must discipline our minds to concentrate on the good, on positive thoughts, the sunshine and water and soil that produce good in our lives, on the thought energy, the emotional powers we concentrate on our affairs to convert inevitable change into growth. In other words, our job every single day, and this day too, is to watch where we're going, what we're doing. If we want love and happiness, be sure it's to love and happiness that you devote your attention, not to discord and bitterness and resentment. If you want success in some field, give full recognition. Yes, give full recognition to success, and it's yours already. Think positive thoughts. Fix the life-giving force of your attentions and assurance and faith on the good you already have. Look for it in every circumstance. Now, make no mistake about it, change is inevitable. You can't halt the process of change any more than you can keep your child a baby. In the words of Dr. Arthur H. Compton, everywhere the conditions of life are changing rapidly, and these changes are all in the direction of greater interdependence. That is, making better cooperation of paramount importance. The point is that in this process of change, we go forward or we go backward. We bow to circumstances or we rise above circumstances. Of course, we cannot be expected to see beyond the point of our understanding any more than we can see beyond the horizon limit of our eyes. But the point is, we can master the thoughts we permit to remain in our minds. We can choose our thoughts according to God's laws. We know we get out of life exactly what we put into it. Nothing more, nothing less. We know if we sow love, we shall reap love. We sow hate, we reap hate. We have the power to concentrate on whatever kind of thoughts we choose. We know that if we endeavor to have an understanding heart, we shall find elsewhere an understanding heart. We know if we pardon, we shall be pardoned. We know if we give, we shall receive. Look at your own picture, 5, 10, or 20 years ago. See what a change has been made on the outside, in the outside person. You will scarcely know yourself. Well, that's the growth of the body. But God has given you the mastery of your mind. Your soul can keep pace with the growth of the body. Just as the less perceptible growth of the trunk of the tree matches the more visible enlargement of its limbs. Look back at what you were thinking 5, 10, or 20 years ago, at the obstacles which seemed insurmountable then, at the joys and sorrows of yesterday. And just as it's hard to believe, those old photographs are you. Yes, we really looked as we did, not as we see ourselves in the mirror today. So it is equally difficult to imagine the progress, the maturity, that our soul has accomplished and made in the course of these years. In other words, we do not change without more than we change within. This is all important to know. There is no limit to the transformation which can take place in your mind. When we dig a little deeper in our search for answers to life's questions, when we wisely read between the lines, we find that God puts his blessings upon our efforts and draws us close, imparts to us his divine wisdom. We find, first of all, that our soul, our mind, gains maturity as we react in a positive manner to the pattern of life, no matter how unpleasant or unexpected. A pattern which we may not be able to change, except in our minds. But remember, that's all important in our mind, because what actually counts is what we think, the way we feel about something. The growth of the soul, therefore, depends upon our free reaction to the problems with which we are faced. Our life is part of a divine plan, carefully prepared in every detail. Each moment of that plan offers a marvelous opportunity for our adaptation, for the growth of our soul and of our mind. The whole picture of our lives is so much brighter than the small pieces that hold and which our minds are prone to dwell on at length. Isolated from the background of all this, the whole, some parts, may look awfully black. But let me tell you, our Creator, in time, ultimately moves in on our subconscious mind and plays a pleasant trick on all of us. The unpleasant experiences of the past are relegated to the past. When we realize the power of our mind, the real secret escapes us. As long as we fail to exercise that freedom of choice, all important, endowed to us by our Creator. This mystery of growth functions in time of crises more than ever before. We say, why does this happen to me? How could this happen to me? I don't deserve this. Suppose we say, this is an opportunity, a challenge to react and gain greater maturity. Life with its steady, compelling urge to grow means that any door may open to us at any moment. Life makes us beneficiary of the physical experiences that the ages have bequeathed to us, of the signs and inventions of genius, of the mental and physical work of our forefathers that set us free to seek the larger spiritual things of life. Friends, let us profit by these examples of the past, by physical knowledge, to prepare ourselves better for the experiences of life. Yes, we can encounter experiences of all kinds along life's highway, good and bad, pleasant and unpleasant. We can prepare ourselves for many trials simply through the richness of knowledge of those who lived before us. But along that same highway, each of us is certain to meet some experiences so different from those for which we are prepared and so unexpected. But the point is, are they going to catch us unprepared and unawared? Each of us on life's journey must face a great many such surprising and disconcerting experiences that happen every day, any minute, and take us unprepared, unaware. The knowledge that somehow or other we have inside of us the strength, the power, and mastery of our mind to control every situation, to react, and so to change in our mind our feelings about any problem and situation is all important. What a wonderful privilege is ours to be a human being. To know that we endow with the mastery of our mind, that we can control through our reactions whatever is our fate. No, we may not control circumstances or situations, but we can control our life because we control that which we feel about life. What a wonderful challenge it is. Friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Listen again tomorrow for another Message of Hope with Richard Eaton. This is UBC, the United...
All right, today's podcast is titled Off the Grid Utilities. This podcast was inspired by a friend of mine that I offered him an opportunity where I need somebody to occupy a house because I don't want it sitting empty. And currently there's no power there, no electric on, no gas on, no water hookup. Um, but I'm ready to have it occupied again. So what I was amazed at was, long story short, this guy doesn't know how to function the grid in an urban environment. So after thinking about it, I'm saying, you know what? That's a niche market that's virtually untapped. Educating people who are on the grid that really have a false perception of what off the grid is like. You know, develop some products, organize some awareness educational programs to, oh, no, I hate to use that word program, workshops or retreats to educate these people on how they can be off the grid, on the grid, which basically, you know, how to have electricity, how to have heating, how to have water. But it's, you might be living in New York City, but if you got the right apparatuses and you know how to live an off-the-grid lifestyle, you shouldn't have any problem. So I'm going to play Solar Cabin first. I've played that on here a number of times. I'm playing it for the new people. But it's going to lay the basis. We have Robin here again today, and we're going to talk about off-the-grid utilities. And then we'll have some actual workshop demonstrations on how you can learn how to do this stuff and even purchase them as well.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
Well, okay, that's a little rundown on a solar cabin. He has no utility bills coming in. At most, he's got something for his wood-burning stove that you can get from a sawmill or, you know, forge it yourself. In any event, let me see. Let me press the right button. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
Well, you've got some experience living off-grid. I want to tweak today a little bit from Lamar. Let's say a person's living in an urban environment. They're living in Seattle, Washington, or Chicago, Illinois. They live in the city, and they want to go off-grid. In other words, meaning they don't want to receive a utility bill, you know, no water bill, no electric bill, no heating bill, gas bill. So let's start off with something simple. What are some practical, affordable solutions for cooking? Because this person, he bought up a Hama cook. So what are some practical off-the-grid cooking solutions that a person can do while on the grid? But yet,
a Dutch oven,
off the grid technologies for on the grid living.
A Dutch oven.
Okay. Now, for those who don't know what a Dutch oven is, could you break that down?
I don't know exactly if you could break it down. I know it's an oven that you fashion outside of the house. I don't know, out of rocks or stone. Can you explain it?
Yeah, I'll look it up. But what's the function of a Dutch oven and how is it off the grid, I mean, for cooking?
I believe it's what was the question? I'm sorry. I'm distracted here this morning. Sorry.
Okay, how would you use a Dutch oven, which is an off-the-grid way of cooking?
So it's used outside, and I think fire or propane, wood. I'm looking it up now. But a Dutch oven is one. Another is the little tanks. Sterno.
Okay.
The Sterno heaters and cans, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
So a Dutch oven is a thick-walled cooking pot with a tight-fitting lid, and they're usually made of seasoned cast iron. Some are made of cast aluminum or ceramic. So what's special about a Dutch oven is perfect for braises because of how heavy it is. It helps retain and distribute heat evenly, ideal for searing meat at high heat and maintaining low, slow temperatures for a long time. So I guess because of what it's made out of, you can put it right on the fire, if you will. And it's big. It's almost like a slow cooker, the size of it, but it's metal, cast iron. And I guess because of the size of it, you can stick it right on the fire, roast your meats, prepare meals, you know, outside, off the grid, while in the middle of the grid.
Could you use a Dutch oven and Could you use a Dutch oven in combination with Sterno?
I believe so, but you would probably want a fire versus a Sterno. A Sterno is probably going to heat like a container, a pot or a pan. And this Dutch oven, it's like more heavy, more industrial, if you will.
Okay, well, you got Sterno. All right, now what would you use Sterno for?
Individual small pots, warming dishes, if you will. You know, smaller size containers, pots.
Okay.
But then out also nowadays they're putting solar powered chips in little devices. That you can
right.
you can take a really small panel and recharge your stuff. So now you can have solar power appliances as well.
All right. Now, you can also...
Coffee pot,
also,
heaters.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the grid, okay, let's count them off. For cooking or preparing warm foods, you got Sterno, a Sterno
mm-hmm.
setup, which I've seen Sterno use mostly to keep foods warm.
Mm-hmm.
But you got Sterno, which is an indoor application. You have propane stoves. You have propane stovetops. That's three. You can also cook outside with solar cookers, and there are different types of solar cookers, or a propane grill. So that's at least five off-the-grid ways in which you can prepare hot meals, and even cooling baking applications, because you can also bake using solar energy.
You can bake in that Dutch oven as well.
Right. So, yeah, this person seemed really concerned about not being able to cook. So I was just, what I take for granted, because I can cook inside or out, and no matter what the temperature in,
everyone
well.
Takes that for granted, so much so that what will they do, or what did they do when they were ordered to stay at home and when there were no products on the shelves? What do people need to prepare? Because they think that the government is always going to come and help them. The government will come and round you up and in the little white van and say, we're going to take you to a safety center, but it's a shelter. It's a detainment center, actually, except that
right.
you're a citizen and you're going to get a vaccination. They might give you some state or federal money and EBT and food stamps. And whatever, all of that, and people are so complacent and so used to that they'll accept something and refuse to let it go, and you can barely live off of what they give
right.
you. Barely.
Now, here's,
okay?
here's another thing. He was concerned about water. And I said, well,
yep.
water can be delivered to your location.
Yeah. My ex-husband, he has a plot of land in the middle of the grid in Tacoma, Washington, in the middle of the grid, but he's living completely off the grid. He doesn't have electricity there. He has generators. And then he was bringing in water. Now he's got, like, water machines and has water delivered. And he also goes to the well. There's an unfluoridated well, fluoridated well. And he goes over there and takes about five-gallon jugs and fills them up with water and takes that there. Living completely off the grid in the middle of the city. Yeah.
Okay, well. Yeah, now I've got where I'm at. I've got a well. I'm on a well
mm-hmm.
with a reverse osmosis filtering system. But like I said,
mm-hmm.
you can also have the Culligan Man or one of these water
mm-hmm.
delivery systems. You can have
mm-hmm.
as much water as you want delivered to your home. You want it once a month, once a week. You can have water delivered to your home.
Yes, off if it's necessary.
Yeah,
when the solar generators kick off, and he runs the heat on propane.
Okay.
The heat is run on propane, but he needs the solar to power the switches. You know what I mean?
All right.
So
right.
But it works.
Now, there's soul prop devices out there, too. Because let's say with electric, you can't, like Lamar, he, with solar camera guy, he operates off of 12-volt systems. But let's say in this case you have the electric cut on. There's stovetop solutions. I don't like hot plates, but a lot of people use hot plates. But I got this, I have an induction stovetop that is pretty cool. And, you can go that way. Now, I ran across a lady several years ago. She's married and everything. And she uses one pot to cook out of, hot stuff. Just one. She's a minimalist. But, yeah, what amazed me about the conversation I had with this guy is he probably doesn't see it this way. He lives in a town where the utility companies essentially have a monopoly. And he's grown accustomed, I would say even he's become addicted.
Dependent.
Right, there you go, dependent. He's become dependent upon this particular company. Well, I can give you the city. I don't have to give you his name. BG&E. That stands for Baltimore Gas and Electric.
So
it's a monopoly. There are no other utility. There are two utility companies in town. BG&E, which supplies electric, and they supply gas. Okay. And it's a private concern. It's one of the oldest utility companies in the United States. And the other utility company is the city. And the city, they sell you municipal water, which a lot of that came from you anyway. Because on a typical roof, about 41,000 liters of water hits the average roof in this country per year. Now, if you don't have any way to harness that 41,000 liters of water, that's a lot of water. All right. Then it's going to become storm water, hit the pavement, find its way to the sewer. The sewer is basically a network that leads back to a cleaning plant, and they clean up the water, and then they pipe it back through to you. So they're selling you your water, although they've cleaned it up. But like where I'm at, I'm on a well. So, which comes out of the ground, and with a reverse osmosis system, I clean up my own water, change the filters out every year. So where I'm at, there has been no water bill here for 25 years.
Yeah.
Zero. So, and I get bottled quality water. Now, but anyway, going back, so I said, another part of our community-based business is basically organize some kits, revolving around cooking, along with some demonstrations to educate these people on how to use Stern, how to use Dutch oven, how to solar cook, how to use a propane stove. Some people, I don't mind cooking outdoors.
And also how to door your survival food, if you will, or off the grid food.
Right, you know what? Prepping.
Well.
Yeah, exactly. Showing people how to prep when it comes to food.
Prepare and store.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
a few years ago, several years ago, they did the government did an audit, and they sent out a questionnaire to people asking them if they had survival food and how much, and if they were willing to be like a distribute if in times of emergency or national disaster. And basically what they were doing is they were taking an inventory of your stuff, and then they go back and they can confiscate your property, your survival food, your money, your assets. The government can even put you in loosely called the civilian military. They can take a person and constrain them, not enlist them into the military, but they can use them for their skill sets and their assets, basically. Yeah. There was a presidential order that allowed all that. That's a whole another topic. But you want to prepare the people, and this as well as empower them as well. If that makes sense, that's where I'm going with this.
Right. Yeah. So some of this stuff we're going to actually have to have workshops so people can actually get some hands-on experience. Because I'm this guy. I guess we're going to call it off-the-grid utility school. And part of that will be, you know, prep food, you know, like I say, how to operate without being dependent upon the utility companies. And we're talking about for the base. We're talking about for water. We're talking about for hot cooking. We're talking about for heat. You can be in an urban environment with the proper technology and be all right. But one thing, and there might be this, which is not for everybody, there's going to be probably a learning curve for some people because, hold on, I don't know if that's the right term, learning curve. Because they're so dependent upon, I guess they've developed the habit of going to the thermostat, flicking on a switch. I'll give you an example. Now, when I was in Europe, I spent three consecutive winters in Europe. And in wintertime, now, first thing, there were, in the homes that I was in, particularly the primary one that I was living in, there was no central heating. No, and I was in Germany, and it gets real cold in Germany. No central heating. However, in this one particular house where I was staying, they had remote heating in each room, but it was not central. It was remote heating in each room. And the three consecutive winters that I was there, the remote heating never kicked on except for one time, and that's in one room. And that was in the bathroom. Somebody had left window open, and, of course, guess who had to go and close the window? Well, that was me. But in three consecutive winters, and they had long winters where I was, that's the only time that remote heating went off in that one particular room. Now, how the house was heated was what they call over there a stove. Over here we might call it a furnace. It was, you know, aesthetically pleasing stoves, you know, with glass, and you can see the wood burning. We would go to the, sawmill, and we would buy scraps of wood every 6 or 7 weeks. About every 6 or 7 weeks, we go to the sawmill and get scraps of wood and then put it in the it was in the living room. Like I said, this it was real nice, aesthetically pleasing stove or furnace. We over here, we might call it a furnace. Over there, they call it a stove. And, you know, it would heat up. It heated up every room on the – how many rooms were in that place? You got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You had 6 rooms on one floor, and then you had the loft. Okay, so that's 7. So it that little furnace, or stove as they called it over there in Germany, heated up all that, and everybody was cool. All right. And the scrap wood wasn't, you know, it wasn't that much. You go to the scrap wood, you pay the dude some money, and it wasn't that much. And, you know, you just load up. We had our little carts, and we would load them up, put it in the back of the van, and drive home, and then load it into the basement. And, you know, when it was time to re-up on the furnace, I mean, or the stove in this case, no moving parts. There were no moving parts to it. So I did 3 winters like that. So now, depending on, because with zoning, every, particularly in this country, you know, is different. I'll give you an example. In Washington, D.C., unless they've really changed the law. Now, there are 3 monopolies on when it comes to utilities in Washington, D.C. There's Pepco, which is a privately owned company. They have the monopoly on electricity in Washington, D.C., and I would say the Washington, D.C. metro area. You know, the surrounding suburbs of Montgomery County, Prince George's County, Fairfax, Virginia, Arlington, Virginia. Fairfax County, those places. Then you have Washington Gas. From that neck of the woods, Mid-Atlantic region, Washington, D.C., Washington Gas is people probably, not probably, but they use the gas primarily for cooking and heating up their homes. And it's in the metro areas that I just mentioned. And then for water in Washington, D.C. proper, you got the city, Washington, the Water Authority. Now, all 3 are monopolies, but in Washington, D.C., Washington Gas had, matter of fact, the 2 private companies, which is Washington Gas and Pepco, they have the legislators of D.C. by the balls. They control that monopoly power. Now, I'll give an example. Washington Gas, they have on the books legislation that you are not allowed to use propane applications within your home. Now, where I have a place in D.C., you can drive from my front door to the Maryland border, PG County, in about 30 seconds, less than a minute, okay, if you're driving. Walking, you can probably walk it in less than 10 minutes. Matter of fact, I know probably about 5 minutes. It's not far at all. So in Washington, D.C., you're not allowed to have a propane stove. Propane stoves or a combination stovetop and oven, which I've used in different places that I've traveled to. People had it in their homes, like in Barbados. That's what practically every household has, a propane stove, cooking unit, with, including baking. So in Washington, D.C., proper, the propane stove is outlawed. Now, you can have a propane grill on your backyard, but you cannot have a propane stove on the inside of your house. But if you walk 5 minutes or so to the Maryland border, cross the border into Prince George's County, Maryland, you can have a propane stove in your home. And with and around the Beltway, at least the PG County side, which is a suburb of D.C., you have Suburban Propane. They deliver propane to people who have, you know, the tanks to their homes. But this is it's that dividing line. So, but there are other applications that you can go legal. So wherever you're at, you're going to have to find out, right, what's allowed in this neck of the woods and what's not allowed in this neck of the woods. Another reason why I like, and I play the solar cabin thing so much, and I buy rural property myself, is because I can essentially apply off-the-grid applications and not have any utility bills. I mean, now with heating, like I said, you got two choices. You can either go to the sawmill or you can chop down wood. When I was in Germany, I helped a friend out one day, came by the apartment, and he needed, and this was a cold day too. I went through a culture shock this day. Because I had never done it before because I had never had to do it before, but he needed some help chopping down, you know, some trees for wood, you know, to heat up stuff. I mean, he had his own personal place and he had a bar. Okay. So I went out, and he bought me some lunch and all that, and we were sitting out there. Man, it was really cold, but I worked up a dripping wet sweat in that. But that was part of the culture in that neck of the woods. So, it didn't cost him anything but, you know, two sandwiches to feed me. That was it. But, you know, a lot of people around the world, and like I said, this was over in Germany where, you know, I spent the day chopping down, helping a friend out chop wood that would be converted into firewood. Or the way that we were doing it, you know, go to the sawmill or whatever. However, most people in an urban environment are not going to do that. They're not going to go to the sawmill. First, they don't even think that way because they're used to the comfort and conveniences of, and a lot of people don't even think that, you know what, a lot of people that are on the grid don't even realize they're on the grid. They can't relate to that term or anything like that. So we'll be giving offline workshops. I guess we're going to have to telecommute some of this stuff. But on water, how you can not deal with municipal water. And let's say the easiest, well, the most convenient way to deal with to get off the grid with and not dealing with municipal water is call one of these local water companies and have water delivered to you. If you get serious about it, you can have water tanks strategically placed within your property or outside your property, and you got your own private water tank, and you know, it locate it, and I'm going to have to find a green plumber to come on here one day. And you can rig your house up all legally to have water, and so you can, everything you regularly do with water, you can do it with that. And then, so water utilities, off-the-grid water utilities, off-the-grid cooking utilities, heating utilities off-the-grid, I'm looking at, you know what, I'm going to have to teach people this. And we're going to have a special session or two just for landlords. Because what's killing a lot of landlords is, A, they get these high water bills that they can't pay and it eats into their profits. And then B, the tenants who are paying for their own electricity or paying for their own heat, you need to take those people off the grid, because if you have a tenant who has a high electric bill or gas bill in the wintertime, particularly if they got kids, the chances of you getting paid are slim to none. So there are techniques and technologies, and you're going to have to, I would recommend, educate or train your tenants on how to use these, because once again, if they can't pay that electric bill, I've had people come in with a $1,500 electric bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the way a lot of these urban cities are hooked up, in the wintertime, like in D.C., once it reaches a certain date, you can run that heating bill, or the utility companies, or even the monopolies, they are not allowed to cut off your utilities. Not in D.C. I don't know how it is in other places, but you can't do that. So, anyway, we'll go into deeper detail on that. But landlord, we're going to have special hands-on sessions for landlords, teaching the technologies and the lifestyles that need to be taught to go along with that. About 6 years ago here on It's My House, we had a guy on from Uganda. He called him from – or actually we called him and passed him in from Uganda. The way they run it is they figure out, and this is a cultural thing in Uganda, okay, particularly the ones who get on the solar, which are people in rural areas in Uganda. They figure out how many hours within a 24-hour day do they need to use the electric. So for this guy, he needs about 4 hours a day. Some people need 6 hours a day, but they base their lifestyle and their movement on how much electricity will they need in the course of a 24-hour day. For some, it's 4 hours. For others, it might be six. And just that concept alone, the typical American probably can't even wrap that around their head. Wait a minute. I only have electricity for 4 hours a day. Because Americans are very wasteful. Very wasteful. Anyway, Robin, I mean, what's your take on anything I've said, particularly the wasting part?
We waste because we take for granted, and then out of ignorance is not bliss, because we're talking about basic survival. And for this willful ignorance, sometimes you have people that won't be prepared, and so when a national disaster happens or access to water and food and electric happens, they won't be able to adjust. They'll try to go to a shelter or somewhere else, and they won't have any options. So knowledge is power. You know what I mean?
Right.
Knowledge is power. It a lot of people won't even, because they don't have an interest or an aversion to living off the grid, because they think it's rural. They think it's what is the word am I looking for? I guess hard. You know,
right.
They think of it as really hard.
And like you said earlier, they become dependent upon those local monopoly utility companies. I'm going to play this one clip from the Rural Energy Foundation. And once again, in Uganda, particularly in the rural areas that which a lot of people are off the grid, they might have solar. But if they have solar, how many hours a day? It's just like your cell phone. How many hours mm-hmm. a day do you need? Can you budget for that? So I'll play this and come back.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts. So when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working. And then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tonnes of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technicians, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Because it's cold, the beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
All right, now, it's what time is it? Let's say it's time for us to get somebody back on here from Uganda. We like to say about, well, 5-6 years ago we had guy Julius. He was on calling. He called in live. I called him and then patched him into the podcast. It's 6, what time is it? It's 6:55 in Uganda, p.m. in Uganda right now, so... we're going to line up somebody. I'm going to start working on that today. Because it's you got to pick up the lifestyle. You got to pick up a lifestyle to match the technology to get the benefit of the technology. Buying solar panels doesn't mean you're going to automatically zero out your electric bill. No. You've got to have a matching, sustainable lifestyle to aid that technology. You know, for some people, it might be, you know what, instead of turning up the heat high and not putting on a sweater or some extra clothes inside the house and forgetting to leave a window up, no, you're going to have to close the windows, make sure the house is properly insulated, particularly in certain rooms, and put on a sweater inside the house. So it comes down to, I think the life, matter of fact, what I recommend people do is you got to adjust your lifestyle, then you look at the technology, you know, like switching out light bulbs, insulation. There's certain things you do before you get to the fancy, smancy stuff like solar. You got to adopt a sustainable lifestyle first. And many Americans... a lot of people in Western countries, but Americans in particular, overall on a critical mass basis, very wasteful. When it comes, food, energy, and it really comes down to lifestyle. For instance, one phenomenon that I noticed over in Germany was, now over here, let me give you the context. Over here in the United States, you know, there's a whole bunch of people that have two jobs, a second job, some even have a third job. All right. So they can, you know, make extra money so they can pay for, well, now people are starting to work extra jobs or whatever to pay for Christmas gifts or pay off bills or whatever. What I noticed in Germany was, and even a lot of Europeans outside of Germany call Germans cheap, but I don't, they're sustainable the way I see it, is, and one of the things I've learned over there was less is more. If I watch what I consume and waste as little as possible, or not waste at all, then you have, without getting a second job, you have more disposable income. And you can, and they're little things. Like, for instance, No, I had access to a car. I had access to transportation. But culturally speaking, at least in the part of Germany or the parts of Germany that I was in, culturally speaking, even in the dead of wintertime, instead of getting in your vehicle, motor vehicle, and driving to the grocery store, we walk. Or get on, hop on a bike, not a motorbike, but a regular, I guess, 10-speed bike or whatever, hop on a bike and ride to the store. You know, with your little basket, you can do your grocery shopping, put it in the basket, and ride back home. But most of the time, and we're talking about people of all ages, cultural thing. So, you know, a lot of people only use their cars to go to work or take these long trips. Now, another little distinction that I observed and experienced when I was over there is in the wintertime, let me do the American standard over this way. It's normal on a cold day in the northern states of the United States, on a cold day before you go out to work or go out to school or what have you, shopping or what have you, go outside, start your car up, you know, and warm it up, so to speak. Well, where I was, this is five consecutive years during winter times. Well, three consecutive winters, and the other times I was there different parts of the year for five consecutive years. But in the winter time, they didn't go out and warm up their cars or their motor vehicles. They would, with the engine off, when they're ready to go, they would first scrape, you know, the frost or whatever off the windows and whatnot, make sure they had clear visibility, get in their motor vehicle, start it up, and go. Because they consider warming up your car wasting. That's just the way they rolled. Okay. And at first, for me, it was like a culture shock, and there's a lot of other little things. Culture shock where, but, you know, I adjusted and assimilated into it, and then when I came back over this way, you know, all right, well, I don't have to earn extra money for this, that, or the other because, you know, instead of driving to the store, I'll walk. I've been doing it for the last 3 months. I've been walking to the store. So, you know, I'll do that here. And then next thing you know is, damn, I haven't driven a car in months. So even in a grocery store, just even traveling. I know I was in Denmark once, and there was a passenger that they wouldn't allow onto the plane. I'm surprised she even got to the gate to even board. But the stewardess says you cannot bring on that American size suitcase. As you know, Americans, we like to have big suitcases, supersize our drinks. We just like it's like Americans are like the Texans of the world. We like to do everything big. But they wouldn't let on their plane until she had to check it in the cargo bay, but she couldn't bring it on as carry-on luggage, that American-sized suitcase. In the grocery stores, you don't see, at least I didn't see in five consecutive years, I didn't see like the big gallons of water, big supersized anything like we do over here. Everything would be smaller. And even some of the foods, like a lot of the salad dressings, if not all of the salad dressings, but most of them, like our salad dressings are fat-based. But a lot of their salad dressings were yogurt-based. But there's a lot of little things. But a lot of it, what impressed me the most over there was their household expenses were like super, super. I mean, imagine the house that I was living in. Their electric bill for the whole year was something like $55. No, excuse me, heating bill. Whole year, $55. The electric was super low, too. But it all came down to lifestyle. So we'll have off-the-grid workshops, which I guess we're going to have to televise some of those through Zoom or whatever. But so people can actually spend a weekend where, okay, you got to cook. You didn't have no problem with hot foods. You didn't have no problem with water. Okay. You spent the off-the-grid weekend. Now imagine, apply that to your regular lifestyle. But some people might adjust to the lifestyle. I saw a benefit. Because once again, in that culture that I was in, it was, I really didn't run into anybody that had a second job. This is just the lifestyle. Less is more. So when I applied that to my life, less is more. Because if you, for instance, if you have, let's say you earn $100,000 a year. Matter of fact, we all know people who've earned a nice, good salary, but they can't enjoy the house they live in because they're busy trying to earn those paychecks so they can pay for that house with the 30-year mortgage on it or the car note. Whereas over there, they'll buy a smaller home, dramatically smaller home, okay, and they're not earning as much as you, but due to the fact they have a certain lifestyle, less is more. Because a lot of Germans, actually a lot of Europeans, they travel, man. They globetrot. They don't do no trips to New York, no 4-hour joints like that. I mean, they get in the plane and they're in somewhere in Thailand or somewhere in, they take their leisure time over there. They're France, England. They take their leisure time very seriously. So they actually globetrot. You know, they might be living in Europe, but they'll go to another continent on vacation. You know, do that 2-3 times a year. So along with this off-the-grid utilities, we're going to have to show people on how the lifestyles that match, that way you can optimize the technology that's involved. You know, like, you know, let me open up Robin's mic. Some people, hey, you know what? Cook outdoors someday. Even in the wintertime, have you a winter barbecue. Or solar cook, all right? You don't like to do that, and you want a hot meal, all right? Use a Dutch oven in certain places where it's legal. Get a propane stovetop and a combination stovetop and oven. Once again, check your zoning wherever you are. Now, in D.C., they haven't outlawed solar cooking. That's one of my hobbies. The only thing I haven't done with a solar cooker yet is bake a cake. I'm working on that. But steaks, ribs, I got my solar cooking devices and all that stuff you have to do outside. But there's some things, because there's some solar apparatuses, you know, you prepare it, you put it in the solar contraption, you place it out in the sun, and it can be, the first solar meal I cooked, it was like 34 degrees outside. It was a turkey burger. I prepared it. Put in the stove, came back, I mean, the solar oven outside, 34-degree weather in D.C., came back 45 minutes later to a hot turkey burger. That's what I had for lunch that day. That was my very first solar cooking day. So we're going to have people where we're going to have to, because with a lot of people, seeing is believing, where they're going to actually, we're not just going to show you, but we're going to tell you what to do, okay? And in the course of a weekend where you're going to actually, you can't go to McDonald's. You can't, no. Everything you need is right here, and then we're going to have some sessions on the grid, okay? And you know what? We're going to probably do some of these things where people's utilities have been shut off. Water company shut you off. City shut you off. No municipal water. The electric or gas company cut you off. Now what? You don't have to panic or worry. And Pastor typically doesn't have no solutions other than I'll pray for you. But some of these technologies we already, but we're going to take people who have been kicked off the grid for non-payment of their bills and then show them, like, here's the technology and here are the lifestyles, match them up, and you're cooking these hot meals, the delicious meals, you got plenty of water, you can go to the bathroom, take a shower, all this in the middle of whatever grid city that we're going to select. It'll probably move more than one, and then go from there. Let me see. Let me go back to Robin. Anyway, Robin, you got 10 plus years experience of off the grid living. Any lifestyle suggestions?
Well, like you said, minimize, less is more. You don't need as much as you think that you do. For a long time, there were long periods of stretches of time that I only had like one or two shirts and one pair of jeans, mm-hmm. to wear. And I was working. So what I would do is when I would get home from work, I would take that shirt and wash it, wring it out, dry it up, and then I would flip it. One day I would wear it inside out, backwards, frontwards, put a jacket on, and people never even noticed that I was wearing the same thing.
Okay.
Or they didn't really care, you know what I mean? Because I was clean, mm-hmm. But yeah, don't waste. We take so much for granted. We throw so much away, and we actually obtain a lot of things, and then they just sit and accumulate dust. We don't even use them or utilize them. So, we get away from consuming. We don't have to consume so much, if you will,
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I less is definitely more. And a lot of these, I've got my favorite travel bloggers, particularly these people in their 20s. How can somebody that's not even 25 travel to travel to every country in the world? Like, according to the UN, there's 195 countries. De facto-wise, there's probably about 200-plus countries in the world. But how can mm-hmm. a person who's not even 25, travel to 100-plus countries? Well, the common denominator that I've found is, number one, they don't have a mortgage. Number two, they don't have rent. Now, they're paying for, accommodations in certain places.
Yeah.
But we'll go more into detail.
They don't have a lease agreement or a commitment.
They don't have a lease agreement. They're not paying any utilities, okay? They're not paying student loans.
No car payment.
No, and they don't have a car note. They don't have a car note. Now, matter of fact, when we give these lifestyle workshops or retreats, one of the things that we're going to go through is household energy or lifestyle styles, the historical lifestyles in the United States. and I've stated this on here before, the first, I know, first 26 presidents of the United States, most of them were wealthy. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and others. Abraham Lincoln. None of those people had indoor plumbing as we know it today in 2021. Not a one. Flushing. Outdoor plumbing. Or a chamber pot. The indoor plumbing back the George Washington, Thomas Jefferson days, that era, colonial times, it was either outhouse or a chamber pot. For those of you who don't know what a chamber pot is, it's basically a pot that you shit in. That was it. We're talking about the president and the first lady in the United States chamber pot you were calling. Okay. Today, no matter what your socioeconomic background is in, or status in the United States, you can find a flush toilet. But like you said, Robin, we take it for granted. Another thing is we can go flick on a light, with, you know, a light switch, and have electricity. Back then, it was candles. Candles, lanterns, that type thing. Now, one thing I want people to take a look at, and I want you to adopt part of the lifestyle of a Thomas Jefferson or George Washington. And here's where I'm going with that. One of the reasons that's keeping a lot of people in the poorhouse is, now remember, George Washington didn't have to pay an electric bill. He didn't have to pay a heating bill. He didn't have to pay that came from a monopolized utility company. He didn't have to pay municipal water bill. That what's been keeping him on that treadmill for years is those three bills alone. So what I'm saying is take a look at the lifestyle, the basic, you know, and if you can, as much as possible, adopt that kind of lifestyle. We got solar now. Okay. We have solar now, so you can adopt that into your lifestyle. All right. Now, the majority of people that listen to this podcast on these topics, I already know they're not going to do it, and that's okay. But the people that will eventually come my way are the people who have been kicked off the grid and they have no other place to go to. Typical person that will come my way. But
you're going to meet
this
them
country,
where they're broken.
We are addicted to ultra-consumption.
Yep.
We're really no better than the crackhead.
Yep.
The crackhead is addicted to crack, and the typical American on a critical mass basis is addicted to ultra consumption.
Yep.
We eat too much food. We pop too many pills. We're dependent upon the United States dollar too much. We're dependent on the local. For instance, there are people that will be sitting ass out with no lights on today. And the dollar store is right around the corner. Candles will go to enough for George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Thomas Jefferson. But for some reason, candles are not good enough for you. Too many of us have become a slave to the local power companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today, you can have your own individualized power company. The
mm-hmm.
technology is out here in Amazon and eBay. Everything you need is right on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You can say the health utility companies. However, most people, which, like I say, they're addicted to the American lifestyle or the Western lifestyle, they're not even going to consider it. But that's okay.
Yeah, that's
I'm not
what,
trying to save
that's
the world.
What happens when you have a government regulation. Then the people become regular, if you will. The people get conditioned.
And you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because the people who signed that Declaration of Independence,
yep,
and the first 26 presidents of the United States, there's a lot more good. You know, it was easier to get rich then than now, unless you're going into cyberspace, due to what you just said, government regulation.
Yep.
You know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was there any such thing as a traffic ticket for parking your buggy during the days and during colonial days? I don't know. I don't think so.
They no, because they didn't have municipalities in buggy days.
Well,
so no. Mm-mm. But they had their other type of racketeering and hustles going on, you know.
Well, a lot of people, I mean, this, the whole Western Hemisphere.
Let me just say control. Control.
Yeah. The whole Western Hemisphere.
The people, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the whole Western Hemisphere was basically developed from European base, because they were trying to get away from the overregulation of the day from, you know, England, France, Spain.
Yeah. That's
Italy.
What
they
say.
They were overregulated then, so.
But that's what they say, but then they come from that saying that they're running from that, and then what's the first thing that they do is
they
start
regulate.
Regulating everything.
They regulate.
Right?
I mean, they did the regulation basically to,
mm-hmm.
you know, really to protect their interests. Like I say, today in most of your major cities...
To protect their rights.
You know, the utility companies, they're monopolies.
Uh-huh.
But you know what? But that's all right. That's why I suggest to people, man, look at the rural solution. Find your area. Now, I'm not saying all rural areas are golden, but there are a lot
mm-hmm.
more that are golden that are not. Find
mm-hmm.
your area of the United States where, and most likely it's going to be in a rural location where there's going to be less rules and regulations that you can actually live up to that American dream vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you can build a house, but the property taxes are not going to eat you alive every year.
That the
or
American
if,
dream is no longer a dream, it's a nightmare, because it leaves you bound and stuck in really a hopeless situation. You're going to pay on a mortgage 30-some-odd years, okay? And then watch this. Once you want to do the tiny facilities, because once you put a permanent structure on the land, it becomes real estate that you
right.
have to pay property taxes on now. It's ridiculous.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So it's bad enough that you have to pay property taxes just on the land regardless, but then you get a 15-year or 30-year mortgage, and so you say, congratulations, after closing, I own the house. No, you don't. The bank owns the house, because if you don't make that payment, they will come and repossess it and put you
mm-hmm.
out. Same thing for if you don't pay your property taxes. you will lose it.
Mm.
So, go ahead.
Robin, before we go to the phone lines here real quick, you got a guest for tomorrow?
Yes, I'm having Coach Kenny from Peacecoin come on tomorrow. We will be discussing community-based business with Peacecoin, which is a brand-new cryptocurrency going live on the market in 3 more days. So
all right, for the intro, I'll just play Claude Anderson.
Okay.
And I'll just play Claude Anderson tomorrow morning and be ready for the guest then.
Okay, all right. Awesome.
Yeah,
because
that
would
save
the road.
About 20
he's,
to 30
he's
minutes
really
right
busy,
there.
So he'll be on the road. He said he'll be in the car, but he'll still call
okay,
in.
Okay,
so
I'll
you.
Start the program
thank
off tomorrow with Claude Anderson. Claude Anderson about no more than 3 minutes. And then right after him, I'll bring you on with your guest.
All right. Thank
all
you.
All right, so people that are listening, we're not going to do the regular 20 or 25-minute or 30-minute thing. Before we get into the program, we're going to do the Claude Anderson bit and then get straight into the guest. That's tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Let's go to the phone lines real quick. 314, your mic is open.
Yeah, I'm glad you could start to consider the time that's wasted. Use on Moon Mountain and Steve Harvey.
Yeah, we're cutting that out tomorrow. We're just going to do Claude Anderson and that's it.
But I noticed one thing, and I was going to bring up what Robin said. The emphasis is being put on for those who don't live up to the contract. But those who do live up to the contract with a home mortgage or any other amortization contract, it pays off very well. So it's for those who don't want, those who would like to try something else, or those who participate with the norm.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with having a home mortgage. Home mortgages are very, very useful. They're useful as a tax write-off, as long as you keep them Democrats out of office, because they like to chip away and chip away until sooner or later they have it all of every advantage that people choose to thrive for and prepare themselves for in that realm. Suppose you had an $800,000 home mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good thing because you would be able to write off about $1,200 a month in tax deductions just on the mortgage. Actually $2,400 a month.
Now, Pianchi, that's based on... Because I think we all agree, not everything's for everybody. So you're right, that would work out great for some people, but not for everybody. So you
Leaving off the grid work for everybody.
Exactly. Most people are not going to live off the grid.
So
I know that.
Tell the situation for
both sides,
in order to satisfy your audience. But you probably got listeners out there who got an $800,000 home, mortgage, should I say, and want to make sure that they're using every advantage that they can. Now, I'm going to tell you something else, too. Normally, when people have that type of mortgage, they also have the educational background that will allow them to be able to dwell
get their
in that
mortgage.
Particular.
Right.
Absolutely. Now, here's the thing. You may mention about people coming to you because they can't pay their utility bill or they have their utility bill cut off. Well, the first thing seems to me that should be of concern is for them to settle that debt. Because when you don't settle the debt that you make, especially when you are participating in a group service provider, you're leaving a burden on the group that you're trying to avoid. Would you agree?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right.
Yep.
And that's really disingenuous. And one way you can say that's stealing. I would rather say it's theft by deception, because that's exactly what it is. Now, how do you prepare yourself whereas you can be able to get an $800,000 mortgage? Well, it all goes back way back when with the child. Now, this doesn't work for everybody, but at least should we not try to find out who it does? And you start preparing that child educational-wise, whereas they can be able to possess certain skills and talents that someone out there, and it is a lot of them, because at this point in the United States, you have to start to import people who can meet these challenges, but give them the skills and the talents, whereas they can sell those skills and talents for those who are willing to pay, either in a job, mostly. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, some people like to take the easy way out and seek entertainment and sports. And really, that's not easy, but then in the case, it is. Because a good entertainer has to put in a lot of work.
Now, we're going to do a podcast on that, Pianchi. I agree with you, and I went to college on a basketball scholarship, but today is ridiculous. And they're not even looking at – they're so – I mean, I was telling somebody if I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't have gone out for the team as a player. I would have been a manager, because there's a whole lot of there's a whole lot of things connected to a sports team on the business side, even on the building trade side.
Yeah, you only need – yeah. Now, what the people do, they usually try to position themselves for one of the great many. It's like a pyramid. Down at the bottom, there's mm-hmm. room for a whole lot of activity. But the closer and closer you get to the top, it starts narrowing it down.
Right. Well, something that you did, Pianchi, now you've built a stadium before, haven't you?
I was a structural steel erector. Yes, okay. I built stadiums. I was a structural steel erector.
I would like to, besides you, that's the part of sports I would like somebody, particularly, not these athletes to talk, will bring it up. You know, get together and then building their own arenas. That's
yeah, what you gonna do with it?
Like
there's one in downtown St. Louis you can buy. What you gonna do with it? The Rams played there for the length of the contract. Then they moved out to Los Angeles. Now they got a stadium there, a $350 million stadium. I think that's what that stadium costs. It kind of slips my mind.
Okay.
And there's no major tenant.
Sports team. Like okay, no major tenant.
Yes. And then you got another thing that's plaguing you, too, is the demographics in that area and the behavior that they express, whereas people don't take a chance going
mm-hmm.
in those areas for fear of life-threatening attacks. Now, getting back to preparing that child. You got to prepare
okay.
that child to where he or she can be in high demand. And if you look at those who import to this country, their sales, their talents, they're in those high-demand fields. Africans, engineering, in the sciences, Indians, medicine. In the sciences, in engineering. Those are high-paying fields. Every society is going to need that.
Right.
Unless you just go stay like Afghanistan, which is about like 4 days after the earth was formed. So apparently they like living that way. Perfectly fine. Leave them alone. So if you got a child that gets into that realm where they can demand, then they are qualified for an $800,000 mortgage and all that goes along with them. Ultimately, it's beneficial for them, like I say, in tax write-off.
Right.
And other things. You might want to use it as a business part of it in your home and write off that also.
Yeah,
so if you can get yourself to the point where you can save 45% of your income, or you have enough income where you can save 45%, then you got that money you can put aside and do other things with. I mean, that's just for those who can do
that. That's a statistic I'm going to need to look up. What percentage would the average American, are they able to save out of their paycheck? I know when my mother was bought her first house, she used to make, it was only $19,900 when she bought it. But she paid $2,000 notes a month and paid it off quick.
Yeah. And here's another thing people are going to have to, you just said some words there. What percentage could the African-American? African-American is not the only ethnic group in the United States. And the ethnic groups that I made mention of are not African-American. I think you make a big mistake when you look at African-American as being a separate nation in the United States. They're not. Because when you go to these medical facilities where you have a lot of these Indians working, you got whites, you got African Americans, you may have some people from other parts of the world too. Those are human beings that take advantage of opportunities by preparing themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is. And I think we should get more into, now, of course, people do whatever you want to. But I got into the habit of recognizing people for what they are. They're people. 60 and 70
well,
is how
that,
much?
That is true.
$130. My utilities is $130 in the summertime. So once you work and made money in the north, move to the south. Well, things are cheaper. The weather is nicer. The taxes is lower. They got Homestead Act where close to $90,000 of your property worth
is
tax-free.
That trend is happening.
Now, here's the thing. You know what's bad about that? People bringing their politics.
Right.
Yeah. Leave them damn ratchet politics behind. Because then, sooner or later, you're going to be ready to move someplace else.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
Why
well,
would you
want to
bring a politics that's socialism? Socialism means somebody's got to pay for that. It ain't for just for free. If it was free, we wouldn't need no politics.
Right.
Then the politics like the life they live. And if they like the life they live, they got to continue to produce that which keeps them in that lifestyle. I wouldn't be keeping them in that lifestyle because to keep them in that lifestyle mean I would have to vote for them. I'm not voting for them. And I'm not supporting anything that supports them to stay in the lifestyle that they're in. Like these silly notions of buy black. That sounds good, but literally it's going to cost. Got to come up with another way.
Well, the bottom line with most people, no matter if they say buy black, isn't it? Because in Walmart, everybody's in Walmart.
Everybody's
in Walmart.
They're not
buying by color. They're buying by price.
There's no way a black business is going to compete against a Walmart starting off. They ain't going to do it. I gave you some examples of how that ain't going to work. That's just a fad.
Right.
It'd be like you trying to buy black and the product was airplanes. How the hell are you going to compete against a boy?
That's true. Yeah, you're right.
If you were buying boats, how the heck would you compete against that one boat manufacturer down there in Florida? Where is the one black community down in Florida? I can't think of it.
Eatonville?
Think of the name. No, it's further down. Some kind of, I can't think of the name of it. But one of the largest yacht builders in the world is located in that town, that area, where the majority of the population was black.
I'm ready to look that
and you
up.
Know the funny thing about it? That company had it set up with the schools. It was they had a charter school that was a maritime charter school.
Mm-hmm.
Maritime charter schools where young people can go to and learn the maritime business. There's very few, if any, maybe one or two in the whole country. And that black city council voted against that school, according to what a friend of mine that lives there told
mm-hmm.
me. Why would you do that? Why would you do that? They make it possible for the child to come there and observe the operations on manufacturing yachts and also get into the business. There's another one out in Oakland, California, with an organization called Oakland Youth First, ran by Boyd Graves, where he introduced young people to the maritime business. Maritime business is very profitable. Whether you are working on a ship-to-shore crane to unload containers, that pays a lot of money. And there's a lot of them to be had. Or if you are a pilot, pilot is the person that when a ship want to come to dock, that ship has to be brought in to port by a local pilot. That's the way it
mm-hmm.
is any place you go in the world. Why is that? Because the local pilot know the area, environment that you're getting ready to bring that ship into. Ships can't stop on a dime, nor can they turn like automobile. So the pilot
mm-hmm.
goes out so many miles away from where the docks are. He boards the ship, they salute, and they raise the flag of the country that you're coming to port. That pilot gets on, takes the helm, and brings the ship in. Tugboats are utilized. That's another business, too. You don't see many blacks. I know one black tugboat company down in the Delta. And they steer their ship. It takes maybe at least three tugboats to bring in a very large container ship.
Mm.
And they position it, pushes up to the dock, because it can't go in there on its own power. And it's tied off. And they unload the containers. Then when time for it to leave, it reverses. The pilot gets on board, takes it out so many miles from the port. Then a boat comes alongside. He climbs down the ladder, gets on the boat, and waves them off goodbye. That's part of the maritime business.
Well, there's a
lot
out there to get
into. You don't see any blacks
doing
that. Yeah. So anyway,
well, and only so many blacks in the country anyway, so we can't be into everything on a critical mass basis.
That's the point. It's only so many. So how in the hell you always last in everything down there, according to the data of sustainability? Last in education, you last in health. Only thing I can say is one thing, and I really hate to say this, but you must be cursed. You go around Indian society, they talk about that. You go to African society, they talk about that curse. The sins of the father follow the child.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard that.
So you look
before.
And see a lot of knuckleheads around here, and something must be wrong. So, heck, they eating food, they're drinking water, they sleep. So something else must be wrong. So, heck, it must be a curse. You have to sprinkle some water on their forehead.
If that'll help.
Yeah, so no, if you want to talk to people and try to get them involved, in that type of living, then I think it would be a good thing for those who want to do it. It is kind of fun. I used to do the outdoors
camping
a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, camping. Or there's some YouTube videos where you see some people that stay out in the wilderness for several years. They build a cabin. That's hard work, though. And you still got to do what? You still got to be astute in what you're doing. There's one little Filipino woman. She built her own little cabin out there in the woods.
You know what? I haven't seen her videos in a while.
And she trapped and do mm-hmm. all those things. Woman is smart as
heck. I got to look her up again. Yeah, I used to. I haven't seen one of her videos in a while. Let me see if I
yeah,
can.
Yeah, for those that want to do that. I wouldn't start my child off in this society trying to live in that lifestyle myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
and another thing,
right,
with your children, you got to start early because the older and older they get, they are getting involved in other things. And
right.
I'm trying to
yeah, by the time
I got one
got
more venture
three,
with my grandson is to teach him to get his commercial his general aviation pilot's license, and to instruct him on that is not as easy as it was to instruct him in other things, you know, 10 years ago. And that's because there's other things that's vying for their time. And the older and older
you get. That's true. Activities, friends, the opposite sex. You know, new interest.
I've been able to keep him away from. I ain't saying I've been able to, but I've instructed him about that. You know, another thing too. People, young people, males or females, they come from a certain class family. They ain't marrying down. It don't make sense to marry down. You get into marriage, you have to be. Complacent with somebody of, you know, your present position.
Right.
If not, it causes problems.
Well, these days, women have more options, and probably everybody has more options. So, some people got married, women, this is some years ago, you know, as you know, just to get out of the house, out of their parents' house.
Well, that's a bad thing, I
house,
think. You remember Dallas, the series with J.R. Ewing?
I used to watch it, yeah.
They stayed in that big house. You had about three families that came down to the kitchen table and for the breakfast dining table
right.
together.
Mm-hmm.
And they slept
well,
in that place. Because what is
they, now, that
Robert
was a different
mentioned.
Story. They had a family business.
Absolutely. You only need so much space. You need a bedroom. The bedroom has got its own bathroom and so on, so on, so on. You come down and you have your meals, your discussions. You got a cook, a team of cooks that's prepared the food for you.
Right.
In some cases, that's cheaper than trying to do it in a separate
Oh, yeah, because if
home.
You go out and then, you know, you got somebody spending $200,000 on this house, $500,000, you know, it's a family business. JR and Bobby were brought up in the family business. And that, I would call that, you know, one season they would go up to their rooms, like you said, and another season they had, like, little, their own place on the estate. It was outside the bigger house, but the bottom line is everybody was on the same land.
Absolutely, and the business that they was in. You know, another one that was comparable to that was Falcon Crest.
I didn't watch too much of that, but that came out after Dallas.
Julia Roberts played in Falcon Crest.
Okay, Ronald Reagan's first wife was in that, I believe.
So there's a lot of information demonstrations on what to do. Now, for the far, far future, and really not that far, it's going to be space.
I wouldn't
want to go to Mars.
When,
I think
Bezos,
I like it here.
Yeah, Bezos
yes.
and Sir Richard Branson went up. They're
yes, that's going to be the
next
nexus. A lot of business
yeah,
up there.
Yeah, that's the next one. You're right.
even if you just recovering space junk. That's a big business. Same thing as you cleaning up these island, composite islands of plastic that's floating around there. That's a business. Get involved in it if that suits your fancy. Don't just be in the business of coming out, stringing yellow tape, taking pictures, surveying the neighborhood, and covering up dead bodies. I'll talk to you later, man.
Okay, all right. Talk to you, Bianchi. Everyone will be back tomorrow. Everyone have a good rest of the day.